Let me encourage you to turn in your Bibles to Acts, the 18th chapter. Acts 18. While you're turning there, let me mention to you that in the lobby, out that way, on the table, there's a copy for each of you of this little flyer, which tells of the program that we are sponsoring on July the 10th. Down at Madeline Bertrand County Park. We will be preparing another mail-out that will go in late June or early July to surrounding congregations. And we'll give them more information about what we're providing and so forth. But we, as the host congregation, we need to be there. And we will run the van from here down there and back, for those of you who are concerned about transportation. So put that on your calendar. It's a wonderful opportunity to be together with other Christians in the area and to coordinate our efforts for the Cass County Fair, which is taking place just a few weeks after that. Also, today, we got a lot of things going on today. Visitation at the funeral home in Niles for Donna and Dave's family is going to take some of our folks, and Bill Gibson is ill. He's our usual song leader at the program at Timbers. So we need you to be there. Carl's going to lead singing. I have a lesson for them, and we'll have a communion service for them. But if you can possibly be there, we would appreciate it, because we need all the help we can get in supporting those folks, taking them to their rooms, talking to them, encouraging them, and trying to help them at a difficult time sometimes in their lives. I want to talk about fear this morning. And for a minute here, I want to talk about what I'm not talking about. Larry Fox is scared to death. Right now, he's just petrified because he hadn't gotten a turkey yet. And he's afraid he ain't going to get a turkey. So he's got all of his relatives out trying to shoot him a turkey. Well, that's not what I'm talking about this morning. That's a little bit of an exaggeration, too, but that's not what I'm talking about this morning. I'm not talking about what you worry about. That's not our concern. What we're talking about is fear. I mean real fear. What are you afraid of? If you were to sit down and write what scares you, really, what would be at the top of your list? Donald Trump? Hillary Clinton? What scares you? Are you scared about this country? Are you afraid of death? Do you have a fear about disease? Cancer. Are you afraid of losing a loved one? We've been down that road, haven't we? I have. I went through 5 years of being afraid of losing my wife, and then I lost her. So I know that fear can paralyze us. Fear can take our joy away from us. Fear can depress us. And God does not want us to be fearful. Three times in Acts, we see Jesus telling Paul, "Do not fear." And each of those three situations is different. So let's take a look at those three situations here for a moment. In Acts, the 18th chapter, beginning with verse 9, we see a political kind of fear. And this is an interesting passage. "Then spoke the Lord to Paul, 'Do not be afraid, but speak. Don't hold your peace, for I am with you, and no man shall get on you to hurt you.'" Now, I'm leaving it there for a moment purposely. Have you ever held your peace because you were afraid? I have. I've been afraid of what my family would do. My father told me, if you ever become a Christian, you're not my son anymore. That scared me. It took me a while to get over that fear. We've had situations in which there have been individuals that have tried to silence us. And it's important to understand that Paul in this situation is in the city of Corinth. That's more like South Bend than it is to Washiak. But to speak up in an area with people you know is fearful. And so Paul is worried about this. He's concerned about speaking in Corinth. And so Jesus says to Paul, not only don't worry about this, nobody's going to hurt you, but he also says, and listen to this, for I have many people in this city. Now, wait a minute. Whoa. This is Corinth. This is not a Christian community. It's not even a Jewish community. This is a heathen pagan community. These aren't Christians. And yet God says, Jesus says, I have many people in this city. He's not talking about Christians. What he's talking about is people that have a heart for God. What he's talking about is people who probably will become Christians. What he's talking about is people that share the values that Jesus Christ intended for his people to have. But when Jesus says, I have many people in this city, he's not talking a congregation of 15,000 people. There's maybe 100 Christians in Corinth at this time. And that's very liberal. You know, we have lots and lots of threats to believers. And it can cause us to be fearful, afraid of speaking up. People can threaten you. Even people of your own house. My father, I loved dearly. And I was afraid. Afraid to step out when he said, you're not my son anymore if you become a Christian. And many times, God uses others to help us in those situations. In this case, what happens is that there's an incredible government support for what Paul is doing. You go on to verses 12 through 16. Look what God does here. When Gallio was deputy of Achaia, the Jews made insurrection with one accord against Paul and brought him to the judgment seat, saying, this fellow persuades men to worship God contrary to the law. When Paul was about to open his mouth, Gallio said to the Jews, if it were a matter of wrong or lewd wickedness, reason would have it that I should bear with you. But if it is a question of words and names, and of your laws and traditions, you look to it. For I will not be a judge of such matters. And he drove them from the government seat. You know, I think it's important for us to understand. I have talked, and others have talked here, about what's happening in America today. And we're concerned. We're worried. But I hope that our doing that has not caused you to be fearful. When we passed out the flowers last spring, I had one person who was belligerent to me. One. I'm not sure anybody else did, but I had a guy back here that was pretty hostile. When we do the things at the Cass County Fair, In all the years that I've been working out there, we've had one incident that I remember. That was when Cynthia ran into the guy who said his dad was a cat. But for the most part, people have been positive. We need to thank God that we live in a place where we don't have to be fearful. We need to thank God that He has many people in this place. Now, they don't understand everything the way I'd like to see them understand it, and I hope we can reach out and help people to come to a better understanding, a more complete understanding of what God would have them to do. But the fact of the matter is that we don't need to be fearful about the political situation in this country. Now, I don't know what's going to happen in this national election. I have heard people talk about being fearful if Trump is elected, fearful if Clinton is elected, fearful, fearful, fearful. Well, I don't like any of them, frankly. Sometime I had hoped in my life I would have an election where I could vote for somebody instead of against somebody. I don't know whether it's going to happen or not. But I don't have fear about America. That doesn't keep me awake at night. Because God is alive and well on planet Earth. And just as He worked here in a Roman culture, in one of the most ugly, heathen, immoral cities in the world at that time, God worked through the political process to preserve Paul. In Romans, the 13th chapter, beginning with verse 3, we're told rulers are not a terror for good works, but an evil. Don't be afraid of the power. You know, I'm outside here on the property quite a bit. I meet neighbors. I've met the Pokagon police. Had some good discussion with them. Every now and then, the state policeman that patrols this will stop when I'm out here mowing and we'll talk for a while. I've talked to the guy back here who has an interest in the political situation. You know what they say about this church? They praise this church. Why? Because of what we're talking about. Let me read the rest of this. We're continuing in Romans 13. Do that which is good and the power will praise you. Yeah, they're thankful we're here. The state cop said, I'm so glad you are here across the street from the casino. Just your presence is important to the city of Dowagiac. I think that's pretty significant. The passage says, the power will praise you, for he is a minister of God, a revenger to execute wrath upon he who does evil. You must be subject to the minister of God, not just because of fear. God doesn't want us to be fearful people, but for conscience sake. So pay your taxes. Render to all their dues. Tribute to whom tribute is due. Custom to who custom. Respect and honor to whom it is due. See, God doesn't want us to be fearful of political situations, because these are workers of God. The people that control our government, they don't want anarchy in people. I've told you the story many times of the city that was established in Liberal, Missouri, down southwest of St. Louis, where a group of atheists made a city in which they made it illegal for a church to exist within the city limits. It lasted 5 years because the crime rate went so high, they had to close the city down. We are working to be good citizens in this community. We clean the road. We participate in city events. God uses civil law to protect us. We have many people in this city, just like Corinth. Don't be fearful about the political situation in which we find ourselves. Don't be fearful about America. Don't be fearful about Dowagiac. Yes, we need to work to invoke change. But don't let that keep you awake at night. There's a second time that Jesus comes to Paul, and this is a personal fear issue. And this is in Acts 23, beginning with verse 11. And then the night following, the Lord stood by Paul and said, "Be of good cheer, Paul, for as you have testified of me in Jerusalem, so you must bear witness of me in Rome." This is an interesting situation. Paul has had people make a vow to kill him. You ever had anybody threaten to kill you? You know, that's pretty serious. And even in today's culture, we have that happen. One of the things atheists like to do is they, when I'm doing these programs and I'm talking about heaven, I've had three different times where a guy stood up and pointed a gun at me and said, "You want to go to heaven? I'll help you right now." It was a bluff. I knew it was a bluff. Though it didn't scare me, it didn't make me fearful. But I think it's important to understand that God has told us that in many situations, He will personally take care of us. And in this situation, Paul's enemies are serious. They have taken a vow to kill him. You read verses 12 through 14. There are 40 men who have taken a vow to kill Paul. They are not going to eat or drink until Paul is dead. That's pretty serious. How's God going to handle this? Well, it's interesting that God works in mysterious ways. Not only through members of the church, but also sometimes in ways you wouldn't expect. And I'm sorry to use personal examples here, but you know me. That's all I can talk about. I'm not a preacher. All I can do is talk about experiences in life. A couple of years ago, I've been teaching about 35 years. I had an atheist in California threaten me. He threatened me by going to the school system and telling the superintendent of schools in South Bend that I shouldn't be teaching in the public schools because I was promoting my religion in the classroom. Well, even then, if that were proven to be true, I would be fired. So I was concerned. That was pretty dramatic, but nowhere near as dramatic as Paul's. I mean, Paul is threatened with death here, and these guys they're serious about it. But look what happens, verse 16. But when Paul's sister heard of their laying in wait to kill Paul, he went and told Paul, and Paul sent his nephew to the chief captain. The captain called 200 centurions, saying, "Get 200 soldiers ready to go to Caesarea, and 70 horsemen, and 200 spearmen, and deliver Paul to Felix." You realize what sized army that is? There's no way these 40 guys that had vowed to kill Paul are going to be able to get by all that. I mean, God has provided in an incredible way. I've often wondered, what did the 40 think when they saw Paul surrounded by 200 soldiers? Trained Roman soldiers. And backed up on top of that was 70 horses and 200 spearmen. You know, God didn't need to do all that. He didn't need to motivate all that. It would only take about, maybe 50 guys. And Paul had been very secure. This is the way God works. God works personally. And what happens here is that, of course, Paul is preserved because God doesn't want Paul to be fearful. And don't you think that when Paul saw that happen, it encouraged him and strengthened him to go on with what he had planned in his life? You know what happened to me? The atheist in California made the mistake of going to the superintendent through Dr. Craig at Notre Dame, the head of the biology department in Notre Dame. It so happened that the head of the biology department in Notre Dame had hired my department head as a mosquito counter. Notre Dame has a major program in the genetic makeup of mosquitoes, which is a big deal right now with the Zika virus. So when my department had heard that this had been leveled against me and that this had been sent to Dr. Craig, he stepped in, went to Dr. Craig, went to the superintendent, who suggested I should get an award for being the promoter of positive relationships between faith and science. So it went exactly the opposite. And I had nothing to do with this. This was God working in an incredible way to turn evil into good. You know, sometime when you've had a problem in your life and it's been resolved, you need to sit back and look at what happened to make it resolved. Because what I think you'll see is if you look at it, you can see the hand of God. You can see things happening that would never have taken place by any kind of a chance process. I'm glad Julie's back. But I want to tell you something. The fact that Julie went down and took care of a sister-in-law who had been abusive to her and unpleasant to her and had given her all kinds of grief for 25 years or so, and the influence that has had, not only on Carl's sister, but on the entire family, is incredible. This is God working. Incidentally, it's interesting that Julie retired just in time to do this. Just in time to do this. If she had gone the full length of her retirement, she'd still be a full-time librarian at Navarre. I believe the hand of God works in that way. God works personally in our lives. And sometimes things don't go the way we want them to. But a lot of times what happens is that we don't know the best thing to have happen. Listen to Paul in Romans, the 9th chapter, beginning with verse 1. I have great heaviness and continual sorrow in my heart. Why? Well, he's talking about his friends. He's talking about his family. You have a family member that you're praying for and they're going the wrong direction. You got a family member that's not becoming a Christian that desperately needs to become a Christian. You need to understand Paul understood that. And he's not fearful. He has heaviness and continual sorrow in my heart. For I could desire that I might be sacrificed for my family, for my kinsmen, according to the flesh, who are Israelites. My heart's desire in prayer to God is that they might be saved. That's the prayer. But don't be fearful about it. When I became a Christian, I thought, well, that's interesting. I'm saved. I have a relationship to God. But my mom and dad and my brothers, there's no way they'll ever become Christians. See, I didn't have much faith in the way God operates. I didn't realize that God uses strange things to affect the way in which people in my family that I love behave. My mother became a believer before she died. My father became a believer before he died. I baptized one brother into Christ a year ago last November. And the other one's that close. And this isn't me. I wasn't even there. This is God working. So you can have heaviness in your heart. You can be concerned about others. But trust God. Don't be fearful. Don't let it keep you awake at night. God will work. We can't be fearful or worry about the fact that our efforts seem vain. And so you say, man, I've been trying to get the guy that works next to me at the shop to listen to the gospel of Christ. I'm afraid, I'm scared to death. He's not going to do it. Well, turn it over to God. Don't be fearful. Don't be fearful about your child. Your child will find their way to God. Do what you can. Pray to God. Turn it over to God. Don't be fearful. God uses family. God uses one another to protect us. And the other fearful area that I want us to talk about for just a minute, the third one that is in God's Word in Acts, is fear of death. And this happens in Acts 27, starting with verse 23. This is a situation that is interesting. You need to read the whole passage. But Paul's in a boat. He's going to Rome. He's on the Mediterranean at the wrong time of year. And he told the people that owned the boat, don't try to go. It's too dangerous. Winter's on us. But they're looking for money. And so they send them out. And here they are in the middle of a horrible storm. Now, Paul is in a bad situation here. There have been bad decisions made by others that have put him at risk. You ever had anybody make a bad decision to put you at risk? Well, if you've been on this planet very long, you know the answer to that has to be yes. And in verse 20, the Bible says, all hope was gone. All hope was gone. You ever been in a situation you thought you're never going to get out of? Ever been in a case where you didn't think there was any way that you could possibly survive what had taken place? Some of us have had that happen in the military. Some of us may have had it in with a disease. But what's interesting about this is that Paul, because of his faith, because of his relationship to God, is not fearful. Listen to verse 23 and 24. For there stood maybe that night an angel of God to whom I belong. Isn't that interesting? Paul identifies his position as saying, I belong to God and whom I serve. He said, don't be fearful, Paul. So God says, don't be afraid. Because you're going to be brought before Caesar, and God has given you all those who sail with you. Let me ask you something, and don't answer this to me, answer it to yourself. Are you afraid to die? We all have an instinctive resistance to death. That's why we survive. But when you sit down in the quiet of your home, your bedroom, wherever you spend your quiet time with God, are you afraid to die? Why? If you are, why? Here Paul is. He, as far as he's concerned, he's about to die. But he's still functional. He's not fearful. Great Christians lose their fear of death. And you want a demonstration of that? Come to Timmer's with me this afternoon and ask Audrey Gibson if she's afraid to die. Do it. Ask Audrey if she's afraid to die. You know what she'll tell you? She'll tell you, oh, I really want to go. I'm ready. Audrey has no fear of death. Great Christians don't fear death. But our faith has to be stronger than our fear. Our faith has to be stronger than our fear. You say, well, are you there yet? No. I'm still growing. I'm still struggling. But God calls us to this. Listen to what Paul says in Philippians, the first chapter, beginning of verse 23. For I am astray between two choices. I have a desire to die and to be with Christ. There's one choice, which is far better than staying here. That sounds like Aubrey. Nevertheless, my staying alive is more needful for you. Having this assurance, I know I will abide here and continue with you so that you may grow and have a joy in faith. Paul says, there's some other reasons for me to live. You need me. The church needs me. That's Paul talking. We all have a role to fill. We have a purpose in life. And staying alive makes that possible. In 2 Timothy, the fourth chapter, Paul says this again, this time in a little different phrase. For I am now ready to be offered, and the time of my departure has arrived. I have fought a good fight. I have finished my course. I have kept the faith. Our faith has to be stronger than our fear. So there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, our righteous judge, will give me at that day. And not to me only, but to all those who are longing for his appearing. Don't be afraid of death. Let your faith grow. Realize that what you have experienced on this earth is the worst you're ever going to have. just gets better. And you may be in a station in your life where you don't think it could get any worse, but it just gets better. As Christians, God does not want us to be fearful, not fearful of the political situation, not fearful of our personal needs, and not fearful of death. So I come back to the original question. What are you afraid of? Where does fear cause you to struggle? Paul had another statement in Philippians which helps us in this regard. A challenge for you this morning. A hard challenge. Philippians 4, beginning with verse 11. I am not saying this because I am in need, for I have learned to be content whatever the circumstances. I know what it is to be in need. I know what it is to have plenty. I have learned. Let me emphasize that word. I have learned. See, we have to learn not to be fearful. That's part of our education. That's why we study God's Word. That's why we come together like this. To look at what God says, to study His Word, to better understand God's purpose for our lives. I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation. Whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or want, I can do everything through Him who gives me strength. See, that's the secret to getting rid of fear. To rely upon Jesus to give us the strength to face what happens in life. And when bad things happen, when things come into your life that you hate, when Satan wins a victory over somebody you love, that's the time to let your faith, your relationship to Christ, work out that fear. God sustains us in life so that we are not fearful people. You know that song that we sang a little while ago? The one that says, Master, the tempest is raging, number 425. Master, the tempest is raging, the billows are tossing high, the sky is o'ershadowed with blackness, there's no shelter or help is nigh. Don't you care that we perish? How can you lie asleep when each moment is madly so threatening, a grave in the angry deep? We sang that song, and it's important to look back at the chorus. No shadow can compass the... The winds and the waves obey thy will, whether wrath of the storm tossed sea or demons or sin or whatever it be. No water can swallow the ship where lies the master of ocean and earth and skies. They all shall sweetly obey thy will. See, that's the promise of faith. That's what drives out the fear. Sometimes it's helpful for us to pray together about a fear. And if you have a fear this morning you want to bring to us, that we can pray about with you, we can ask God to sustain you, we would count that a real honor to do that. And if you're not a Christian, there's no need for you to live with the fear of death. If you're not a Christian, there's no need for you to continue to struggle with concerns about things that most people are very concerned about, money and politics and so forth. Be a Christian. We urge you to do that. If in any way you're subject to the invitation of Christ, we urge you to respond to His invitation. As together we stand and sing to encourage you, won't you please come?